Good morning and welcome to Atheist Talk on KTFN or NF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio or streaming online. We appreciate you tuning in. Today is Sunday, April 30th, 2016, and I am your host, Hertzy Hertz. We are here to chat panel style with Jeff, Vincent, and Greg regarding the March for Science. And I'm totally surprising you guys. Do you guys want to give like a short 2-sentence blurb about yourselves? Greg?
Well, Greg, I've been on this show many times. I'm a biological anthropologist. I write Greg Layton's blog at Science Blogs, and I am interested in parades and marches, I guess.
Vincent?
My name is Vincent Hopwood. I happen to be a multimedia professional, and I'm kind of around the Twin Cities online. I happen to be one of the moderators for Twin Cities Geeks, and I run a socio-political religious Facebook group called A Civilized Heresy.
All right. And Jeff?
I'm Jeff Rojas. I'm a staff scientist at the University of Minnesota, and recently, I guess, curiously peaked at advocacy because I have never really done it until now.
Awesome. Well, this is an open conversation, and we welcome and encourage listener interaction with your phone calls to 952-946-6205, your emails to radio@mnatheist.org, or tweet us at atheisttalk. The phone number is the phone number is always live, but you can email and tweet us. Sorry, I had some notes from last week in there. All right, so Jeff, Vincent, and Greg, welcome to Atheist Talk.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy.
Awesome. So let's start with some questions for before the march. And let's start at the beginning. When did you first hear about the March for Science?
I heard about it because I'm involved in an email discussion list with some scientists, and somebody sent an email out saying, I mean, again, I can't believe these scientists are going to attempt to do a march. They're going to screw it up. What are we going to do to stop this from happening? And the next two or three emails were about, well, actually, maybe they won't screw it up, but maybe somebody should get a hold of them and help them, and then so on and so forth. And I don't know what happened after that. But it was basically my first exposure to it was the reaction of a lot of colleagues, by a lot of science colleagues, mainly in climate change, thinking that it's a bad idea to let scientists out of the box unless they've got – and I'm talking about people who are into training scientists, unless they've got some training and some sense of what they were doing. So the beginning was a fear and loathing of the process by my colleagues. I didn't have that reaction myself, but that's how a lot of people thought.
Vincent?
I started hearing about it in the mass media as all of these marches started showing up. I mean, as people started reporting on the inauguration protests and the Women's March, I was hearing that kind of as an outgrowth of the drive to have scientists run for office, that there was going to be this march coming up in the spring.
I had heard about it in, I guess, late January, and started hearing about the formation and interest of the local march in early February, just on social media after following the discussion that Greg alluded to.
Okay. So, I mean, if we think about marches in the past, usually there's always like the march. And so the whole thing with sister marches has kind of become – it feels like it's become kind of a new thing. But how do you guys feel about the idea of all these of marches now happening not only all over the U.S. but all over the world?
What was old is new again. I mean, this is nothing in other parts of the world. I guess I'm thinking of places like France, where there are, I don't want to say constant strikes, but it isn't unusual. So, for example, to have truck drivers suddenly decide that they're going to stage mass protest, against whatever policy issue affects them. I think in the United States we had kind of a lull in sort of this coming together of people from across the country, in order to form marches and help shape policy. And I think we're just getting back to that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we are. this was not uncommon for how things went back during the Vietnam era, for example. But also Earth Day, which I think the first Earth Day was 1970, was one of those events that happened everywhere. And it even happened even more everywhere than this sort of thing. It happened in every elementary school, that sort of thing, around the entire country. And so that, in a sense, is a nice – it resonates well with the idea of having these sister marches for Science March. I get the sense that the reason why there were so many sister marches for the march, or the Women's March, was because there are actually too many women to fit in Washington, D.C., it turns out. And so it evolved and allies. So between, you know, and in a sense, that was, I think, an inspiring thing. Because there is, you know, we just had a march yesterday. I think there were just a few hundred people in the march locally here.
About 1,000.
Yeah. And it was not meant to be a march with many sister marches and so on. So, yeah, I agree. I think it's – with Vincent, I think it's – this is kind of the normal way of doing things.
So we're just getting back to the norms.
Yeah, I think it makes more sense. It's easier for people to walk out of their house and go to a local march rather than getting a flight or buying a ticket on a bus to go all the way out to D.C. And it also makes it impossible for local politicians or lawmakers to dismiss the message being carried out, because with only national marches, they can say, well, this isn't really an important issue for Minnesota. This is all of these other states.
Awesome. So, Craig, you mentioned that there were some reservations among the scientists and such. And, Jeff, you said you saw some of that. Did anybody have any reservations of themselves of the marches, of just being like, well?
Well, I think my own personal thinking on this accelerated beyond the reservation level right away, simply because I'm a science communicator and I work with scientists all the time about this. And I hear all the time people say scientists are the worst communicators in the world. And then I point out, yeah, like Bill Nye, no one ever listens to him. Or, you know.
I was going to say, I grew up with Bill Nye. Right. That man talks and I stop everything.
Right. And I grew up with Carl Sagan. And so it turns out that there are some. But on the other hand, there are so many scientists. The fact that we can name a dozen that are great communicators is expected, you know. So the truth is that they're not necessarily anything. Scientists are not necessarily anything but whatever it is that they are as scientists. So and it is true that academics tend to be really bad communicators, because academics that are good communicators are punished by the academic system, literally punished and driven out by the academic system. If you're a really, really good communicator, outside communicator, they don't want you at universities. So it's possible that you could get a bunch of scientists together to really screw something like this up. But there's also an awful lot of people in the science communication field who are actual scientists, who are savvy, they know what to do, they know how to organize things. So there is no reason to say that scientists would be any worse at doing this than any other group, or any better than any other group. It all depends on how they play the role.
I think there's some cross-pollination too. You know, the discussion assumes, you know, old white male dude, as opposed to other people that have experiences with more activism. You know, members of the gay and lesbian community, African Americans and other ethnic minorities, you know, women who, you know, have had to be stronger advocates for their own issues within that community. And I think that there was some expertise that was lent, I guess you might say. So I don't think the scientific community was like starting from scratch when it came to this.
Yeah,
I agree with Vincent. One of the very first things we did in Minnesota actually was reach out to organizations that essentially do this for a living, because we don't. And like most scientists tell people, when you want to study what we study, it's best to talk to us, because we do it for a living.
So you went to the experts.
Yeah. If you go to our webpage, you can see we had about 60 or more endorsing organizations. And if it were not for the Minnesota Nurses Association and SEIU Local 284, I can tell you the Minnesota March probably would have been a disaster. And what ended up happening is we had, on the scale of about 50,000 people show up, and zero incidences.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, if it hasn't been mentioned before, Jeff is one of the organizers for the march, and was on 2 weeks ago? Yes, two weeks ago. I know my dates. All right.
Jeff, you said there were 50,000 in Minneapolis. Is that the count?
Yeah.
In St. Paul?
Yeah. We've talked to a number of people, analyzed it ourselves as both scientists and people who aren't science enthusiasts are wont to do, and eventually came up with a number between 40,000 and 50,000.
Nice, because I was going to say the first estimates were at 10, so it's nice to see it that move up.
Yeah, the 10,000, I think, was an estimate of the people that were gathered in front of the cathedral. But people filtered in. A number of people were at the rally site. There was a merging of the Kids Climate March at the intersection of John Ireland and Kellogg. It was a giant march when you take a look at it. One of the biggest in the country, actually.
Oh, wow.
We really do have a history of that, because if you look at the Women's March, I think we were one of the biggest there, too.
It was about 70 or 100 or something. Somebody's going to do 70 to 100 for that.
Yeah. So how did you guys feel as we were getting closer to the day of the march? Were you getting excited? And Jeff, you specifically, you had to be terrified, excited with all the emotions.
Yeah, I was anxious. I was anxious beyond belief. I've got epilepsy, and when you're stressed out, you get migraines that make it feel like somebody hit your head with a baseball bat, and I was not looking forward to Sunday.
And then when you got there, how'd it feel?
I was in too much pain dealing with the fact that my skin was slowly peeling off from being outside from 8 to 4 in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, give him 1 second here. Please stay with us through the break. We'll return to Atheist Talk with our guests, Jeff, Vincent, and Greg. I am Hertzie, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're tuned in to Atheist Talk, and I'm your host, Hertzie Hertz. We're here with Greg, Vincent, and Jeff. Before we get back, however, I do have to remind everyone listening live that immediately following the program, you can listen to American Atheist Viewpoint, an official production of American Atheists. So stick around, and remember, you can always catch up on American Atheist Viewpoint by subscribing to the podcast version in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or whatever podcast player you choose. It is early morning today. As for the here and now, if you'd like to get involved in today's conversation with Jeff, Vincent, and Greg, you can call us at 952-946-6205, email us at radio@mnatheist.org, or tweet us at Atheist Talk. I do have a couple of announcements. Our donors of the week this week is Janice. So thank you, Janice, for donating and helping us stay on the air. And to all of our wonderful donors, I do have three quick highlights for this week. First off, May 4th. May the 4th be with you, Vincent. It's also the Day of Reason, so please keep that in mind. I do know the Minnesota Atheists is going to have something at the Capitol, and that should be a fun and educational thing. I also happen to know I'll be speaking, so if you want to hear more of my voice, that's a great place. We also are going to be having a first pitch competition for our annual Saints game. Rules will be posted on the website, but if you are interested and a dues-paying member of both of either Minnesota Atheist or the Freedom From Religion Foundation, you have a chance to win the first pitch. Again, please see our more information at mnatheist.org. Also, this coming up next weekend is the May Day Parade, which you can find more information on meetup.com, where we'll be marching. And so you can look if you want to volunteer at either the booth or the parade itself. With that piece of housekeeping underway, let's get back to the conversation with Jeff, Greg, and Vincent. All right. So the next questions I have are kind of going to be at the march, or Vincent, you said that you weren't able to make it, so the social media that was going on during the march. So what was your first reactions to the number of people that were there as you were walking in?
Well, what happened with us is we drove in and parked on the other side of the march. Mm-hmm. In St. Paul, so we had no problem parking. Then we walked towards the intersection of John Ireland and the Capitol, and there's no one around, really. There were like 800 people milling around, like nothing was happening. As we got to John Ireland, just as we got there, the Children's March group, which is the head of the march, was coming up John Ireland. And I turned my Facebook Live. So to go to my Facebook post, so you can see my Facebook Live thing of the whole beginning of the march coming. It was perfect timing. We timed it perfectly, even though we didn't try to. We just did. So then we just watched it go by for 20 minutes, half hour, and then joined in. And it was, and then of course at that point there was thousands and tens of thousands and multiple tens of thousands of people there, and it was just interesting to see that. You also saw, I think, very much clearly that this was really like. People keep calling this a march, the science march, or the march. They keep referring to it as such that you might think of it as a march with scientists in it, that a march of scientists. But it wasn't. It was a march for science, and there was so many more people there than there were. That, yet there was a critical mass of scientists, so that there was just a certain level of geekiness and intensity that was couldn't have happened somewhere else. Yeah, it was quite. It was a lot. And the sign, I think we could probably talk about the signs later, but the signs were impressive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and those signs were visible. I happen to live a few blocks off one of the light rail stations over in South Minneapolis. And you could see people kind of streaming towards the light rail station carrying their signs.
Oh, awesome. So you probably saw like a whole bunch of people just wave after wave.
Yep, and you know, little kids and everything
else. Oh, adorbs.
I was spending the entire time. I got recruited as a marshal at the very last minute, and I was spending the entire time doing nothing but worrying about keeping the crowd moving orderly.
Which, surprisingly, they did really well.
Yeah, there were no incidences whatsoever from, as I said, a 40 to 50,000 person march, which is kind of amazing.
Did you happen to see any countermarchers by any chance?
Just curious
because that would be hilarious.
But behind the stage, when people were speaking, there was a flat earther that was beginning to cause a little bit of a commotion. But beyond that, no.
Oh man,
I didn't even see. There's actually a set of parallel protesters that often show up at marches. They have their own thing. They're not against you. They just have their own thing, and they're saying you're marching. I'm going to be here too. And there's a few groups like that often show up in marches. I didn't actually even see them there.
I saw – let's see. I think I saw the – there was a socialist group and a group, pro-immigration group, who basically they were just handing out flyers. They really – And I was like, at least they were being respectful and they weren't trying to take over anything. Or
I have to say, though, Hertzog, you asked before the break, how did you – what were you nervous about? And I have to say that I was not nervous at all, but I kept thinking about Jeff. Because I was thinking, if I was him, I'd be thinking, like, is anyone going to show up? Or are there going to be 10 times more people than we can handle? You know, what's the magnitude going to be? Because the magnitude matters and we don't know.
Yeah. As it got closer, the organizers and the marshal volunteers, but especially the organizers, were beginning to be very worried because about 5,000 people, about 10,000 people signed up to go. Based on the flake rate, we assumed there would be around maybe 7,000 to 8,000, and we were beginning to see meetups from groups that we had not heard of popping up from everywhere. There were more and more outstate groups. Organizers from outstate marchers were sending.
No, outstate as in rural Minnesota or out of the state?
Yeah, rural Minnesota. There were about, I think in the end, 12 or 13, and we were beginning to hear some of the organizers from a couple of the outstate marches were saying that they were excited to go to St. Paul.
Uh-oh. They're all coming over.
Oh, yeah. So what did you guys think of the speakers or guests? I'll admit where I was sitting once we got to the Capitol, I didn't hear a lot, so I'm really curious.
Well, that was my disappointment with this march. I had been to the tax march the week before. And they had a series of incredible speakers that grabbed the crowd and made them go crazy. And they had a really good sound system and about one-tenth the number of people, which made it possible. And I couldn't hear a lot of the speakers. And I don't think that there were, frankly, a lot of the really top speakers ended up in D.C. They were good speakers. They were great. But what was missing to me were the speakers that grabbed the people and made them and emotionally charged them up a bit more. And all that. I didn't see that. It just wasn't that. I'd like to know more about how you picked the speakers you got and so on. Because I think that was the part where, compared to other marchers, it was a little on the, you know, Mark Borrello is a friend of mine. He's great. And he did a great job. And Seeley was great. I heard what he said. I could hear his speech very well. and it was good. But I guess compared to the weekend before, I was a little bit disappointed by it. It did make me disappointed in March, but it made me a little bit disappointed in, and I would like to hurt some more people.
Well, one of the issues with the sound system is simply money. I mean, we were scraping the bottom of the barrel for this thing. Despite what we were told, it did end up costing a good amount of money, and the sound system that the Women's March used, I believe, was over $10,000. And
wow.
For the amount of money that we raised, we simply couldn't afford it. So we kind of bit the bullet, and I was telling people, you're just going to have to watch this on Facebook later.
Okay, so there are videos that we can get on Facebook and such?
Awesome. Yeah, if you just go to the Facebook page and scroll down a while, you'll find the live video.
Awesome.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you see anything on social media about the speakers at all, or was it mostly just the signs?
Nothing. It was during the Women's March, they went into detail about some of the speakers. I think some of the celebrity speakers, benefited from their celebrity in that respect. But I couldn't name one speaker from the local Science March. I just never heard their names or saw it. Just general information about, the subject matter and the fact that it happened.
All right. Well, here's one of my favorite questions. What was your favorite sign?
Okay. I'm going to go against the flow that everyone else will follow because there are so many good signs. I just want to point out this one sign that I liked it most simply because you would never, ever see this at any event anywhere under any circumstances. It was a simple, small sign someone held up very high that said, geology.
Nice.
And I just thought that was good because where else would you see – I'm not trying to privilege geology or anything here. It could have been biology, but it was geology.
Yeah. I don't know. There were, like I said, I was too busy marshaling people and trying to keep the entire flow going.
Signs on the internet count too on this.
Oh,
so if you were too busy, there, like anything you saw,
even in Thunder March.
Yeah. I guess my favorite would be there is no planet B.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, that's a good one.
Yep. Now it's that peer review one that keeps showing up in these sorts of discussions. I absolutely love that. I haven't seen one to beat it yet. What do we want?
Science.
We want evidence-based science.
When do we want it?
After peer review. Great. We've got this going. We can just go start a march right now.
Well, what I didn't hear, which would have been funny, is the one that says, what do we want? A time machine. When do we want it? It doesn't really matter.
That's a good one.
That's for the march for science fiction.
Ooh.
Yes.
My favorite as an extrovert was, even the introverts are marching. Vincent, I'm a huge geek. And so, introverts to a point are my peoples. And so it was so interesting to see so many people being introverted who are going outside. And I'm like, yeah, you guys pissed off the introverts and the geeks. This is not going to go well.
Yeah, it's on now.
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me of being at an Indivisible event where several thousand people showed up for a fake town hall for Eric Paulson. And I was talking to this woman outside, and I was talking about it, and we couldn't get in the building. And she said, they've woken a giant. Mm-hmm. She is really pissed.
So now the Women's March had the pussy hat. And so I just have one question. Did you guys see anything about, like, a specific hat? This is also because I love hats, as you can tell, because I'm wearing a hat that looks like a brain.
I saw a few tinfoil hats.
Ooh.
No, I didn't see anything. I mean, there was one group from, I think, the immunology department at the U that were wearing lab coats. But otherwise, it was people wearing T-shirts from every group imaginable. And I think the good thing was, because of that and the diversity of signs that showed a lot of solidarity for the topic.
Yeah, I didn't see any hats. What I saw were a lot of periodic table of element jokes.
Oh, yes. Gosh, there's so many of those. Yeah, actually, I did see at least one person. She had a trucker hat kind of thing, and then she actually had stitched kind of the brain thing with yarn and such. Excuse me, that was really cool.
I think I saw one online where it said WTF, the element of surprise.
Oh, yes. That's I saw that, too. I saw it this morning.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, there was a lot of puns, too, that I thought was great. All right, well, oops. Oh, shoot. Did I just close that? 1 second. Well, thank you for joining us, and please stay with us through the break. We are KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you for tuning in with Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I am your host, Hertzy, and we are having what I would classify as a fascinating conversation with Jeff, Vincent, and Greg. Before we continue this conversation, which will be our final segment, unfortunately, there is a bit of housekeeping I need to attend to. It's really important to me that we keep secular voices on the public airways and in podcast form. Atheist Talk is produced with the funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina, Minnesota. Please consider visiting our sponsors, and if you do, let them know you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you would like to advertise on the program and help keep us on the air, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of you, our listeners. You help keep Atheist Talk on the air and podcast form. Personally, I like to use the show to talk to people and get different points of view and on different subjects. If you are able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization, and we couldn't do this show without you. And we deeply appreciate your support. Music for Atheist Talk is composed by member Brett Michael Davis. I am not awake this morning, I swear, and is used with permission. As always, check out Minnesota Atheist website for previous podcasts, previous programs, browse our articles, book reviews, and peruse our calendar of upcoming events. We always have a ton of activities going on around the Twin Cities and outlying suburbs. If you want to get involved, check out the website and sign up for the Atheist Weekly email. The AWE will tell you all when Godless Gamers meets, will help you find an agnostic AA group or a local book club, and even lets you know what speakers Minnesota Atheists will have lined up. It's a great tool to stay connected with the community, and if you enjoy the show and all the Minnesota Atheist has to offer, consider becoming a dues-paying member while on the website. Your support helps serve you better. With all that relevant and useful information out of the way, let's get back to the conversation with Jeff, Vincent, and Greg. So last we were speaking, we were talking about some of the different things that we saw at the march. And I have to say, I have to add a sign to my favorite signs, and that is, at the beginning of every disaster movie, is a scientist being ignored.
That's so awesome.
Oh, yeah. So the Women's March had a lot of criticism from both sides of the aisle on that. Did you guys see any of that, like at the upcoming, during, or now after the event for the March for Science?
Well, Memphis had enough criticism going on, they ended up with two different marches.
Oh, wow.
They had enough conflict going on. I guess the one thing I would focus on just a little bit for my own contribution is to just note the question of politicizing things. One of the things that caused Memphis to split is a lot of scientists said, we don't want to do anything political, we're not political. And, Sean Otto in his book on War and Science notes that that science is always political. An act of science is an act of politics. But it should never be partisan when you are sitting there deciding what to do.
It's a good distinction.
It's a good distinction, although it's not completely always true because, in fact, we now have a party that is explicitly anti-science. So that they kind of made anti-science is partisan, but science is not. And anyway, the point is – that's an interesting philosophy we could talk about for hours. But the point is that it brings up something like a women's march is about feminism. No one's ever going to ask the question, yeah, but do you want to be political? this doesn't make any sense. But in science, it does make sense to ask that question for a lot of people. But I just want to point out that this isn't, we're talking about the internet and social network. My first involvement with social networking and internet was on CompuServe many years ago. And what was I doing on CompuServe? Fighting for science. It was creationism attacking evolution in schools. And Science has always been under attack, always been under attack, and it has always fought back. And we may have seen a period of complacency, and we have seen a period when scientists become very specialized and activists become very specialized, and we kind of go different ways. But it's always been under attack. It's always been a political issue. It's never, ever been anything else. And it's just that sometimes we take little breaks from our realization of that kind of thing, and then we have to come back to it again. And that's really what this is. The Science March was not out of the ordinary the problems that led to the Science March are not out of the ordinary. The march itself was out of ordinary, the ordinary and extreme, very successful. But it wasn't we're always political, and this is not – this is an old problem.
Well, I'm confused. Why – I don't understand why some people in Memphis would say that they don't want to politicize it when they were engaging in political action by having this march.
They wanted to support science, I think, as a you know, support and continued funding of science without getting into the political – what they saw as a political mess about other issues that they did not see as science, like diversity in science.
No.
So they felt that diversity in science wasn't an issue that should be discussed as part of this.
Yeah, I think that's probably a slightly oversimplification, but in the same ballpark of what they're thinking. I'm not completely sure. But yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
very problematic for a number of reasons.
Yeah, this was one of the very first sticking points in the discussions behind the march nationally and locally. And locally, we decided very early on that we were going to be nonpartisan but not apolitical. Before the march, we were reaching out to lawmakers. During the march, we were reaching out to lawmakers. And we were reaching out to lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. We actually invited the lawmakers from every city that was hosting a march in rural Minnesota to go. We reached out to lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, both on the state level and the federal level, to endorse the march. So because science is political, it's dependent on federal funds and state funds to succeed. The results are basic facts and consensuses that need to be included in political discourse in order to figure out how to address the results. So trying to pretend it's not political is a waste of time.
And I don't think people are really exactly trying to do that. I think that people are just confused without having thought about it before over the distinction between that which is partisan versus that which is political and what these things really mean.
And something that we learned when we were reaching out to legislators from our partners was that lawmakers just are very ignorant about science simply because it's not presented to them very regularly. When we would have conversations, the scientists talking to lawmakers would be told, you know, you have 5 minutes to explain what you do, and do not explain this like you explain it to a peer. Because they generally try and go into pedantic details about what they do rather than saying simply, you know, I address AIDS and am researching ways to try and mitigate the problems associated with AIDS. And once you say that and give an example of what you're talking about, the lawmaker understands.
So speak English.
Yeah,
exactly. Speak plainly for us plebs. And then we're just maybe a week or so away. How do you feel we're going to be moving in the future? And be brief because we only have about a minute.
I would advocate to the organizers that they try to make the Science March an annual event and try to move it in with – I know – move it in with, you know, like make Earth Day and Science Day the same thing and keep going with this.
I would say inclusiveness. There are a lot of advocates, a lot of overlap when it comes to everything from the Women's March to Black Lives Matter, where I think it would be a benefit. As they say, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
I would say just continuing the mission, making sure that we don't stop talking after this is done.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining me today. And I hope you have a wonderful Sunday. And thank you for listening. The podcast show will be on the radio page soon, as soon as we're able, and have a great Sunday. Thank you for tuning in.
Hello, and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, April 30th, 2017. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thanks as always for joining us. This week I want to talk about an incident that occurred that came to light last weekend in San Antonio, Texas. The mayor of San Antonio is running for re-election. San Antonio has a two-year term limit for mayors. It's not really a term limit, but the terms are every 2 years. And the current mayor, Mayor Ivy Taylor, who was initially appointed to the position to serve out the remainder of Mayor Castro's term after he was appointed to Housing and Urban Development Secretary by President Obama back in 2014 or 2015. She's running for now her second full term. And in a forum, a mayoral forum back earlier in April, Mayor Taylor said something about poverty that was a little bit concerning. She said she was asked about the root causes or the core cause of systemic generational poverty. And she said that in her belief, the reason that people suffer from systemic poverty and suffer from generational poverty is because they are broken people. People who do not have a relationship with their creator is what she said. And so this is a problem, obviously. I mean, this is not just a concerning thing having to do with comments about atheists, but it really is something that is problematic if you think about, you know, the people who are religious and experiencing poverty. What the mayor is saying is that those people are poor. They're in a cycle of generational poverty because they're not trying hard enough. Basically, they're not being good enough Christians. They're not having a good enough relationship with their creator, and that's why they're poor. I don't know, you know, precisely what the mayor's theology is here, but I will say that based on our research, the mayor has a troubling history of putting her religious beliefs above good governance. She has, during her time on the City Council of San Antonio, she said that or she voted against extending protections to LGBT San Antonians because she had religious concerns about it. She is not in favor of choice for women's reproductive health. She's very, you know, concerned, quote unquote, about people's moral values, you know, whether or not government action imposes something on moral values. And, you know, the mayor is a Democrat. She's been a Democrat for since she's been the mayor. And, you know, so this sort of goes to show that the problems that we have, the issues that we see as they relate to church state separation and attitudes toward atheists, it's not just limited to one party. So we need to, number one, dispel that myth right away. But more importantly about this, she started out her answer by saying that, you know, it was a complicated problem and that that we could be there all day talking about it. She should have left it there or actually talked about some of the actual causes. But she instead had to go on and say, you know, in her personal view, it was because of broken people who don't have a relationship with their creator. Now, one of the fun thing here is that she then went on to release a statement that sort of doubled down on her initial position, on her initial comments, saying that the video had been dishonestly edited and that it was a politically motivated attack misrepresenting her views about combating poverty. There's no misrepresentation here. She said exactly what she believed. She said that the video was edited to cut out the rest of your answer. I don't care what the rest of your answer is. If you're doing things that are helping, you know, alleviate poverty in San Antonio, great. But when your attitude is that people are getting into poverty because of a lack of relationship with their creator, that's a problem no matter what else you're doing to solve those things. And all those other programs, if you're talking about, you know, lifting people out of poverty with social programs, if you honestly believe that the root cause of poverty is lack of relationship with a creator, how exactly do these programs help? That's the answer to the question that I have. So American Atheists sent a letter. We talked with our affiliates and some other local groups who are down there in San Antonio. We spoke with FACT, which is a Freethinkers Association of Central Texas. We spoke with the Secular Student Alliance group that's down there, as well as with our state director who's down there, Vicky Getman. So we worked with them to formulate a response, sending an open letter to the mayor. I've sent it to her office directly. We published the letter, inviting her to have a dialogue with her constituents, because you know, this is one of those instances that is a teachable moment. This is an opportunity for the mayor to sit down with the people in her community and, you know, learn what we're all about. She said in her initial statement that people who don't have a relationship with their creator therefore do not have a good relationship with their families or their communities, and therefore are not productive members of society. I challenged the mayor to look at what the atheist groups in her community are doing. You know, there are multiple charities down there, multiple atheist groups down there that are working with on homelessness issues, that are literally addressing the issues that Mayor Taylor was talking about. They don't do it because they have a relationship with their creator. They do it because they want to make their community a better place. And you know, this is one of those instances where simply yelling at the mayor isn't the right approach to this. This is an opportunity for us to show her, to show an elected official just how misguided those statements are, that this isn't simple partisanship. I was not paying attention. American Atheist was not paying attention to the San Antonio mayor's race when we raised this as an issue. You know, she said that in her follow-up that this video was dishonestly edited, and that it was a misrepresentation, and that it was intended to mislead voters. Again, there's nothing misleading about her statements. She added on in her follow-up statement as an attempt to explain this, saying, "I believe in original sin, and that was the context of my comment in the YouTube video clip. We are all broken, from the richest among us to the poorest, until we form a relationship with our maker. I could have expressed myself more clearly in explaining my belief in the forum." That's the problem, Mayor. If you think that we're broken until we forge a relationship with our maker, that and you go around saying that and that's the root cause of poverty, I don't care what the rest of your answer is. There's no dishonesty there. I'm going to straight up say, I don't care what the rest of your answer is. You can believe that, but you're the mayor of all the citizens of San Antonio. And in the city of San Antonio, something like 40% of the population is non-religious. How many atheists hear what you say and look at that and say, wow, my mayor thinks that I am not a productive contributing member of society? They need to know that you, mayor, don't actually think that. And if you do, then we have some work to do. And that's why we need to sit down and actually talk with you, and you need to talk with us. And that's why we're presenting you with that opportunity. So I hope that the mayor follows up on this, takes us up on our offer, and reaches out. But, you know, we'll have to see. That's all the time I have for this week. Thank you, as always, for joining us. For more information about our work or to become a member or make a donation, as a reminder, monthly donations are matched. Please visit www.atheist.org. Thanks so much.